Welcome to TechLash, a celebration and dissection of the tech industry and its impact on the world. Warning, this podcast has been known to raise awareness, provoke thought, and spark debate. The views expressed by the host do not reflect those of the guests, sponsors, or any other competing interests.
There is a major breakthrough heading to America.
Twitter has an iPhone.
Researchers at MIT are hailing a breakthrough in the field of artificial intelligence.
Just how crucial is diversity to the tech world's future?
Facebook will be allowed to settle with
the number of users affected by Yahoo's breaches.
Analytica, from different economic backgrounds, different educational backgrounds.
Welcome to TechLash. I'm Theo Miller. I'm here with my co-host, Zibi Nwaka. Zib, who are we talking to today?
Today, we are speaking with Aileen Lerner, who's the founder and CEO of Interviewing.io.
And what do they do?
Interviewing.io is an application that allows technical individuals to take anonymous exams or tests for being placed into tech companies. So you take these anonymous, blind, technical interviews, and then that gets seen by the likes of big tech companies and others who are working with Interviewing.io. So it's somewhat like a two-sided marketplace, and the people can sign up and take these tests. You can gift these exams to individuals as well too, and then they can potentially get placed in jobs.
So if I'm not a hiring manager and I'm just working at a startup, let's say I'm working in HR and I've never hired anyone in my life, why would I listen to this interview?
This will help you understand that there are biases in the recruiting process, and it is difficult to solve diversity in tech without increasing opportunity for folks who might get screened out. Somebody who might not look great on paper to a candidate but does exceptionally well in the technical process may never get seen because they've been screened out for typo or their background doesn't fit what the company typically looks for. And so you reject many positives in the process.
And this is one of these interviews where you met the person in the wild, right? Like you met Aileen in San Francisco. That's how we came across her story and her company and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. It turned out, I found out later that she was actually recruiting, but I had happened to sit down. Somebody saw my shirt, my company shirt, and said something to me. And I thought he was calling me Ricardo. And I said, no, I'm not Ricardo. But he said, no, you work for Carta. I had this Carta shirt on. So I said, no, I'm not Ricardo. I ended up sitting down talking to this gentleman, wonderful person. He was a sales guy at one of these e-sign companies. And so I just sat down, and then Aileen and one of her VPs showed up, and I ended up having a small conversation. I was really impressed. I ended up connecting them with engineering folks on our team to see if it was a good fit. But that's really how the connection started. It was one of those serendipitous San Francisco kind of meetings. And that's one of the benefits I say about being physically in Silicon Valley, is that you can get these moments of serendipity quite often in a way you can't when you're fully remote or you're not around Silicon Valley.
Yeah, I mean, that's why the Valley moved up from Palo Alto to San Francisco pretty organically. But this is definitely like a pre-COVID story. Like, it's almost like tauntingly pre-COVID, the way you're saying we were out in public.
We were out with people in public with no masks and no worries. This was definitely pre-pandemic.
I mean, I watch movies and TV, like watching The Undoing, and they don't have masks on. You're like, what are they doing? Like, that's so irresponsible. And I actually like have even started dreaming of like, oh, I don't have my mask on. So I definitely relate to what you're talking about there. That sounds like a fun time. Without further ado, let's jump into it. But first, a word from our sponsor.
Diversity has always been an issue in tech, and now it has been compounded with a worldwide pandemic that disproportionately impacts underrepresented groups. This needs to change. FlockJ is a tech sales training academy that helps job seekers from non-traditional backgrounds break into tech. Through 300 plus hours of live instruction, real sales practice, and one-on-one coaching, students master the art and science of tech sales. Top tech companies like Zoom, Gusto, and Airtable partner with FlockJ to hire diverse, elite SDRs that ramp faster and outperform ordinary reps. Visit flockj.com to learn more. That's FLOCKJAY.com.
Well, I can go off about why resumes are terrible regardless of anonymity. I started interviewing IO in this quest to kill them. We've had some amount of success, and I'm very excited that the world at large has had louder conversations about how resumes are biased and not good. But anonymity on our platform is really important for a few reasons. We have a practice pool where software engineers can do mock interviews with engineers from top companies and get feedback. And then if you do well in practice, no matter how you look on paper, you unlock our real pool. And there you can book anonymous interviews directly with employers and do them on our platform.
The value of anonymity can't be overstated. Anonymity is valuable in many contexts. Living in a big city, anonymity is valuable. When it comes to hiring, it's not just in service of creating a more diverse workforce. It's really to fix an inefficient system where people are making, as you were saying earlier, people are making decisions based on typos, which is like sort of reasonable, but then they're also making decisions based on pedigree, which may or may not have value depending on the role, especially when it comes to engineering.
Yeah, and you can't talk about this kind of anonymous or blind interviewing without referencing back. If you do some research online, you'll see there was a big study on U.S. symphony orchestras. And basically, in like 1970, only about 6% of the orchestra was comprised of women. And they started doing blind auditions, which makes a lot of sense, mm-hmm. right? With musicians, that seems super obvious mm-hmm. in hindsight. And now if you look at something like the Boston Symphony Orchestra, I think a third of the folks in the Boston Symphony Orchestra are women now. And so from the 70s to the 90s, it's been studied and it made a huge impact. So I want to state that this is probably one of the more kind of well-known studies on blind interviewing, and that really brought it to the light.
So I used to run hiring at a company called TrialPay many years ago, and it was a cool job because I had a lot of leeway and could do experiments like the one I am going to tell you about. I looked at the resumes of those people and scored those resumes along a number of different dimensions, whether they spoke multiple languages, not just programming languages, but human languages, whether they had an email on their own domain, whether they were into music, whether they had a GitHub profile. And then, of course, more normal things that you might expect, like whether they went to a top school, whether they had worked at a top company, how many years of experience they had, whether they had an advanced degree. And I also, on a lark, looked at how many typos and grammatical errors they had on their resume. What I discovered with hundreds and hundreds of these is that where people worked mattered some, but not nearly as much as the typos and grammatical errors. And where they went to school, their years of experience, their GPA, all of that stuff didn't matter at all.
So two things. One is, let's not pretend that typos and grammatical errors don't matter. They do matter. They indicate a person is relatively careless, but it's a pretty low level bar. If you were to think of a net, it's like there's a huge hole cut out of the middle of it. A lot of people can get through that net who aren't necessarily going to be the best candidates for you. The other thing I want to say is that Aileen, she definitely has a background in data, and we'll get into her life story, how she went to MIT. But if you go online and you look at her past writing, if you look at her blog, if you look at her contributions to Quora, it's prolific. And she's all about data. She's all about making her case with data.
This is another example of founders who experience the problem first and then go and attack it. And those are the types of founders I like to work with and hopefully invest in. I think when you feel the pain and you can like touch it and see it and really relate to it, that really creates this mission for these types of founders. And it lights that fire where you can go really solve this problem. And I've always wondered whether cover letters mattered. I remember thinking to myself, does this matter? I've done plenty of hiring. And I will say that I have read a few cover letters when it's like, can they put together thoughts and ideas more? And these roles were client facing. So it was more in the context of, can this person communicate to the set of important clients in a way that would make me comfortable? That's really what I'm looking for, but never was a major deciding factor. Grammatical mistakes, yes, that causes a bit of an issue. But I think like if it's one or two.
If it's egregious,
but I think like dinging somebody over one, two, I think it's also lazy. Like if that's your selection, if you're focused on grammatical errors and not actually even the content, it's just like an easier, lazier way for a recruiter to kind of sift out resumes.
A more abstract standard, when you're talking about cover letters, coincidentally this morning I was reading through a stack of cover letters, and I got to tell you, the first thing I look for is what their opening line is on the cover letter, because you get the vibe immediately, because either they're going to respond to the prompt or they're going to just cut and paste, right? So that's gate number one. But if they're actually writing something that is speaking to you directly, then you can be like, okay, well, that cuts out literally like a third, if not half, of the people who just like blindly threw out a cover letter. But then you go a level deeper and you can get the vibe from a person. You can actually feel with the level of specificity and enthusiasm if they actually care. And if they care, that puts them in a much more select group. So I'm with you in terms of looking at the technical dimensions of a cover letter to see if there are any errors. But it's funny because I would think you would be the same way. So you just sort of sit down with the person for a half second and you're like, oh, I could vibe with this person. Like I could actually talk to this person. Like I could be vulnerable with this person. Like this person is engaged on a level that will allow me to be myself.
Anonymity on our platform is really important for a few reasons. One is to protect the candidate, right? Because they may not want their current employer to know they're looking. But even more importantly, what we've seen is that about 40% of our top performers and our hires have been people that don't look good on paper. And in many cases, those people were actually rejected by the same company that then they get in through the back door when they go through interviewing IO. We had one notable case where a candidate was rejected from a very well-known public company three times based on his resume before he got hired through us, because he had the chance to do an interview anonymously before anybody saw what he looked like on paper.
So Aileen's underscoring that theme that anonymity is valuable for a number of different reasons, right? And the instance that she is citing is one in which the candidate was clearly qualified, but was unequivocally discriminated against.
Hiring's very hard. You will hire some people that weren't good fits, and then you will lose out on people. And if you can supplement and not lose or turn away potential rock stars, and a company like Interviewing.io can help with that, I mean, that's insanely valuable. I can't even really put it into a monetary context how valuable that is. Mm-hmm. You don't know, especially if it's some engineer. Imagine like some of the most gifted engineers, they're outliers. And if you were turning somebody away because they didn't, you know, have the resume, I mean.
Right. But it's not a binary thing. And the tricky part is the whole Steve Jobs thing of the Bozo explosion, right? So I take your point that you don't want to shut off the opportunity to someone who could be like a 20X engineer, right? Like you want the people who are going to take your entire organization and elevate them to another level. But if you just like go after a person who hasn't showered for 3 days because they express the eccentricity you would associate with a 20X engineer, you might end up with a whole department of people who have horrific BO.
Yeah, most companies have standards for hygiene that they put in place for this very reason.
Fair enough. Most
companies do actually have to address that. I have actually seen it in paper, in writing.
I haven't always smelt it in the room, though, is the point.
I would be remiss if we didn't talk about the pushback against anonymous interviewing. So there is a position that if you do purely anonymous interviewing, then you might have issues with actually creating diversity. And let me give you the example, right, with the orchestras again. Even though these orchestras are now comprised of anywhere from 25 to 46% women now, they still have a very low number of minorities. And this is Black and Latinx specifically I'm talking about. So about 1.8% of players in the top orchestras in the United States are Black, and 2.5% are Latinx in the top national ensembles. And so the argument is we still have a problem here, right? Like it's solved one piece.
That's a great point, Zib, and that transitions brilliantly into our next clip.
that's what people call the pipeline problem. And many people don't like saying that there's a pipeline problem, because then it absolves players that are involved in hiring. Because if there actually are enough women in the pool and you're not hiring them, then it's your fault. But the fact is, companies are typically hiring out of top schools. So every year, there are about 60,000 graduates in computer science. About 6,000 of them are coming from top schools that companies typically hire from. Of those, around 1,200 to 2,000 are women. So how are you going to fill every new grad slot with that? You can't. It is a pipeline problem if you're going to keep hiring based on pedigree. You really do have a pipeline problem. So, of course, the solution is to widen your net and find a better way to vet people, which is why we exist.
All these pipelines and nets and mixed metaphors. There are strong opinions to invoke a Trumpian dichotomy. There's good people on both sides. There are good opinions on both sides. I mean, people are saying that the pipeline thing is not very woke to say that there's a pipeline problem, like even highlighting it. And I'm not sure I even fully understand that argument, but essentially it removes culpability from the hiring managers because, oh, well, we'll just have an inclusive mindset. We don't actually hit diversity numbers because there's a pipeline problem. But there's that. And then there's also the blind hiring. It has two different sides of it. And what it really points to is that this is a very important, very sensitive issue. And there's a few centerpieces that we're all looking at. And we're being like, well, is that what we want to engage with? How do we actually get to a place where we have a healthy culture and we utilize or we provide opportunity for people who are otherwise being marginalized?
Yeah. And luckily for us, interviewing IO and Aileen, they're incredibly data-driven. And know how to look at the data and respond to it and improve it. And we can express how we feel. We feel that it's not fair. We know that it's not fair and it's uneven. But whether someone likes the word pipeline or doesn't like that word, the reality is, you know, if you only have this number of candidates, that's just math. No matter how unfair or unbalanced I feel this situation is, the math is the math. So the real question is, how do you grow that number? And I think Aileen is addressing that, and they are looking at that. But that's also something that might even go as far back as high schools and grade schools. The best sports programs in the world, they start recruiting like fifth graders and sixth graders. They start eyeing the top talent super early.
Right. And this is where it gets to the systemic issues in tech.
One kind of crazy thing is we did see that women were performing worse than men on our platform, both overall and specifically along the technical dimension. So then we thought, okay, if that's what's happening, is voice masking going to address this disparity? And it did not. People's scores did not change. So I dug into the data a little bit more and I found something really interesting, which was women were actually quitting the platform 7 times more often than men after one bad performance. And if you corrected for that, if you just took away people that quit after one bad performance along both genders, then the disparity in performance went away entirely. There are probably a lot of attrition events. It's going to be harder than we thought to get to gender parity in tech, because in CS programs, which is typically where companies hire out of, even if we get to gender parity there, if women are quitting disproportionately after poor performances and interviews, then we might need not just gender parity in computer science, but we need a huge surplus of women.
Aileen's being so generous with that euphemism, attrition events. We're talking about cultural conditioning that limits the career potential of an entire gender.
Yes, there are greater issues at play, but Aileen can only control some of that. And this goes back to how we feel versus the data, right? The data showed her that there's a high percentage of folks quitting after this first one. How do they change that and fix it? And then if they do that, the pool is much harder. So without fixing that problem, as Aileen's mentioning in this segment, you would have to have a much, much larger pool of candidates, some multiplier of the pool of candidates, even to get close to that. Even if you had gender parity, if they're still falling off that first exam, you can't solve the problem. So this is a perfect example of going in and actually looking at the data and then saying, okay, then how do we solve for this specific piece?
At the risk of engaging in conjecture, to illustrate what Aileen's saying, I imagine there's a fair amount of imposter syndrome, because if someone tells you your entire life that, you know what, it's really cute that you're into math and science, but that's really not what you should be doing with your time, and you have a personal affinity toward that work, you excel at that work, you could be as talented as you could possibly be at that work because talent does not see race, talent does not see gender. But if people are telling you this your entire life, and then you hit a rupture point, you get a bad score on an anonymous exam that says, you know what, you're not as good as you thought you were. And it could be any variety of reasons, right? It could just be the nature of the exam, or it could be a blind spot in your training, or who knows what. It fans the flames of your insecurity, and it empowers that feeling of being an imposter.
Interviewing IO can solve for that. Interviewing IO is a quick and nimble startup. They can fix for that drop off. They can create ways where someone's not feeling rejection.
I was always a decent coder, but like I knew, especially coming out of MIT, people that this is their passion. This is what they wake up for in the morning. This is what they're obsessed with. This is the last thing they think about when they go to bed at night. I don't think about code when I go to bed at night. So I knew if I'm going to do something, I want to be the best at it, or at least among the best. And it felt like a foregone conclusion that I would not be. So I lost my appetite for it, even though I'm so glad I did it, because now that I'm running a startup, it's easier for me, I think, than a non-technical founder to know what's possible, to know how long things are going to take, what's hard, and so on.
So the reason we're both fans of Aileen is she's definitely followed her own path, and she has a unique synthesis of different professional and academic experiences.
I had a brief stint in computer engineering, believe it or not. I passed Java, but I failed C++. She really spoke to me when she says, I don't go to bed thinking about coding. I absolutely didn't. I wanted to be a musician, so I played music for most of the early days of my college career. But I take the point that having the background and going through that and understanding what it takes to build something out is a superpower when you switch into a role like a CEO, a founder, and a lot of your work is going to probably be less technical and more company building.
I didn't realize it at the time, but I do think that working in kitchens really informed how I thought about hiring and human ability in general, because we all think that tech is supposed to be a meritocracy. And I think it is more meritocratic than a lot of other things. But cooking was way more fair than any office I've ever worked in. If you want a cooking job, you show up in the morning and you bring your knife kit, and then they're like, all right, chop this onion, and they watch you. And then they show you what dishes are going to go on your station. And then they show you how to prep the station, and then they watch you do it. And then during service, they show you how to plate all the different things. And then they're watching you do it. And at the end of the night, if you did a good job, they feed you and they make you an offer. And if not, maybe they still feed you, maybe not, and they send you home. And I just thought there was such an elegance and an honesty to that that I hadn't seen before.
That sounds way better than the extended interviewing process you would experience at a company like Google.
If only it were that easy to go into a job and just show up and show your skills and get a job offer.
I got a good story on this. So I interviewed at Outback Steakhouse when I was in my early 20s, and they gave me a standardized test. And I can't say with any certainty that there was a multiple choice question pertaining to blooming onions, but I definitely did not pass the test.
I've never been in services. I got hired at this regional Italian chain in Indianapolis, but I decided that I just wasn't going to go the services route.
Was it mafia owned?
No, this is like an Italian version of Chili's. I can't remember the name, but it was like a Chili's like Italian chain.
Did they offer endless breadsticks?
You got like a free meal the other night, but it was me and a large number of other people learning the menu and training and learning how to be servers. It was like getting into the service industry 101.
So it sounds like you were going through a very selective elite process to work at Olive Garden.
I ended up not going that route, thank God. But I do appreciate Aileen's reference to the simplicity of that. If only it were that simple in hiring for tech talent.
That's our show for today. If you enjoyed it, please give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts and share it with your friends. Tell them what you loved about it. That would really help us out. If you have any questions or feedback, email us at mailbag@hitstartmedia.com. For Zibby Nwaka, I'm Theo Miller. Have a great week.